Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. In this podcast, three experts discuss the latest guidelines for identifying and treating patients with HER2-positive colorectal cancer, as well as the efficacy and safety data for HER2-targeted agents and their impact on clinical practice. The discussion is guided by pre-canvassed questions provided by healthcare professionals involved in the management of patients with colorectal cancer. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Seagen Inc. This activity is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME.
Hello, my name is Ian Chow. I'm a consultant medical oncologist from the Royal Marsden Hospital in the UK. It's my greatest pleasure to welcome you to this discussion regarding the implications of the latest data for HER2-targeted therapies in HER2-tested patients with colorectal cancer. It is my greatest privilege to be joined by two world-renowned faculty members, Dr. Antonia Sepulveda of George Washington University in the USA and Dr. Silvia Mazzoni of IVUM from Milan in Italy. In today's session, we'll start with an overview of the current guidelines for the treatment of HER2-positive colorectal cancer and testing methods used to identify patients with HER2-positive tumors. The second session, how can we use the efficacy data with HER2-targeted therapies in colorectal cancer to inform clinical practice? In our final session, how can the safety profile of HER2-targeted therapies in colorectal cancers inform our clinical practice? In the first session, we'll provide an overview of the current guidelines for the treatment of HER2-positive colorectal cancer and the testing methods used to identify these patients. The current testing guidelines has been updated in the most updated ESMO guideline and NCCN guideline in 2022. In the ESMO guideline, identification of HER2 amplification is recommended in RAS wild-type patients. However, testing of HER2 activated mutations is not recommended outside the context of clinical trials. In the US NCCN guideline, HER2 testing is recommended in all patients unless there is a known RAS or BRAF mutations. In terms of testing for HER2, the following methods are being used: immunohistochemistry, FISH for acid in situ hybridization, or next generation sequencing, which is recommended in the NCCN guideline. And according to the NCCN guideline, positive immunohistochemistry is defined as 3+ staining in over 50% of tumor cells, and HER2 amplification by FISH is considered positive when the HER2 CEP17 ratio is more than 2 in more than 50% of the cells. The current ESMO guideline 2022 recommended HER2-positive patients with metastatic colorectal cancer can receive in third or late line either trontuzumab plus lapatinib or pertuzumab, or the antibody drug conjugate trontuzumab deruxtecan monotherapy. And in the US NCCN guideline, patients with HER2 amplified RAS BRAF wild type advanced metastatic colorectal cancer can receive HER2 targeted therapy with trontuzumab plus lapatinib or pertuzumab as an initial therapy in patients who are not candidate for intensive therapy. And in subsequent therapy, they can either receive trontuzumab plus lapatinib or pertuzumab, or again the antibody drug conjugate trontuzumab deruxtecan monotherapy. So with this new treatment guideline, I'd like to really turn to my panel members, Antonia and Silvia. So first of all, I'd like to ask perhaps Antonia, how in your clinical practice would you be testing for HER2?
Our oncologists really like to have the results of HER2 testing for all cases of metastatic colorectal cancer. Although we also test primary cancer, any invasive colorectal cancer, we go ahead and first perform immunohistochemistry. We follow the currently recommended NCCN guidelines for a positive HER2 BS3+ staining in over 50% of colon cancer tumor cells. However, for those cases that have scores of 2+, meaning mild to moderate staining in the tumor cells, then those cases are reflexed to FISH testing or in alternative chromogenic in situ hybridization methods, which are known to correlate very well with FISH.
So your oncologist, at what stage of the patient treatment would they be asking you to perform HER2 testing?
For metastatic colorectal cancer.
So they will ask you in their first line treatment when they, you know, before they start any systemic therapy for metastatic colorectal cancer? Is that the timing that the your oncologist may be requesting such testing from you?
Not generally, no, only when the patient presents with metastatic cancer. However, sometimes if we do not have adequate tissue available from the metastatic foci, then we can perform the same stains in primary tumor from the resection specimen or from the biopsy material, the diagnostic biopsy. So those are all options for testing, but preferably, if the patient has metastatic disease, it's preferred to do the testing in the metastatic disease.
So, Sylvia, in your clinical practice, at what time point would you be requesting for HER2 testing? When in the patient's treatment journey would you be requesting this?
Well, because we kind of discovered the HER2 in colon, our group is particularly sensitive, and Italy is, but have been sensitized to HER2 amplification. So we usually start to do the test in patient frontline that are RAS and BRAF negative. This because we will discuss this later, but there is a patients that are both they're rare, they exist, and they're not responsive to the anti-HER2 treatment. So the moment you start testing the patient for RAS, immediately thereafter, the pathologist will do the HER2 amplification. And we use usually the immunohistochemistry. We kind of invented the algorithm of the Heracles criteria, which is 3+ immunohistochemistry, in more than 50% cells, or if more than 10% and less than 50, or immunohistochemistry 2+, then reflects to FISH.
Yeah, so Sylvia, you quite highlight that scoring criteria to call someone HER2 positive is obviously based on the pivotal Heracles study. And is reflected in the NCCN guideline. But not all clinical trials of HER2 targeted agents use the same criteria. So I wonder, what is your thoughts about what would you call HER2 positive? Do you think there are alternative definition of how we call HER2 positive?
Yes, you can also do, we did also, first of all, these criteria were not only, they were validated in Heracles, that they were developed beforehand on a larger, more than 250 patient set, tweaking a little bit the breast cancer type of approach. Because we wanted to make sure from our preclinical data to really pick up patients that had an addiction, not just an overexpression of HER2. And so we were very severe. Our clinical trial and subsequent trial also suggest that either patient that do respond are those that are really addicted to HER2. Therefore, if you shut down HER2, they stop the tumor stop growing, and those are the ones that really have either a large majority of cells HER2 positive. Or have a high copy number. In our own data, it was approximately 9.5 copy number when you do it with the NGS or any other technique. There are other cutoff, but everybody is kind of agree on the fact that in order to really respond, you have to have a higher copy number variation, whatever, which either measure it in immunohistochemistry or in fish or by NGS.
So maybe that's a good point, bringing up NGS. Maybe, Antonio, I can ask you. So do you think it's better just to use IHC in fish, or because NGS is now being used, next generation sequencing is being used so often now in oncology that we can simply use the NGS results?
Well, I think that for best practices, should follow published guidelines. So the guidelines lag behind the developments at this point. So what I think makes sense is probably not yet in some of the guidelines in detail. Now, NGS is used widely for metastatic disease, and therefore the information is available at the same time that you get information on mutational data. And it would make sense to me that if you have that data first, before you get immunohistochemistry and FISH results, you could very well use that information. Although in practice, most laboratories start testing the tissue by IHC and possibly joining FISH if necessary. But I think the future we'll see more and more utilization of NGS data, given that there has been very good concordance between the traditional assays and NGS large panels.
Right. So thank you much, Antonio and Sylvia. So if I just summarize, that you feel that HER2 testing should really be done in patients at the frontline therapy for their metastatic colorectal cancer. We should follow the current guideline, looking for highly amplified patients, HER2-3+ in more than 50% of cells, or at least they need to be FISH positive. But using either HC, FISH, or even NGS would be an adequate method. So I would like to really thank you for your insight in this session. And we'll now move on to our next session. In our second session, we'll discuss how we can use the efficacy data with HER2-targeted therapies in colorectal cancer to inform our clinical practice. When we look at the efficacy data for the guideline-recommended HER2-targeted therapies, these drugs were assessed in a number of studies. Trastuzumab plus pertuzumab in my pathway, trastuzumab plus lapatinib in the HARACO studies, and trastuzumab deruxtecan in the DESTINY-CRC01 study. And in these trials, you can see the objective response rate ranging from 28% to 45%, with a disease control rate ranging again from about 44% to 83%. The median progression-free survival was from 2.9 months up to 6.9 months, with a median overall survival up to 15.5 months with these HER2-targeted therapy studies. Most recently, with trastuzumab deruxtecan in DESTINY-CRC01. However, there are also other investigational drugs trials. Trastuzumab plus tucatinib was assessed in the Mountaineer study, trastuzumab abatacin and pertuzumab, and then trastuzumab plus parotinib. And then there are further studies looking at trastuzumab plus pertuzumab. And you can see again, these studies show very similar results. Although in the Mountaineer study, we observe an objective response rate, again, up to 38.1%. The median progression-free survival was in the order of about 4 to 8 months, and median overall survival, you can see on the chart here. But again, trastuzumab plus tucatinib has recently reported a median overall survival of just over 2 years. So, Sylvia Antonia, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this data. So maybe I'll start with you first, Sylvia. In your clinical practice, as you mentioned early on, you'll be testing patients before their frontline therapy, the first-line therapy for HER2. So if they're HER2 positive, how would you treat them as first-line? Do you use this agent first-line or do you use it later on?
Okay. Yeah, first, just point. I'm no longer in practice, I'm in research, but my group, let's put it this way, because I'm in the middle of a large group that works on colorectal cancer research. We do not treat frontline patients. None of these drugs have been approved by the EMA, by the regulatory European regulatory agencies. So they are used either in a clinical trial context or off-label, and certainly not in frontline, because that will not be possible even for the off-label. We start doing the testing early on, so to be prepared, since the majority, as you know, of metastatic cancer patients will relapse after first frontline therapy and second line therapy. There have been some use in second line in patients that have, for instance, intolerance for irinotecan, which is the second line treatment for MCRC in Italy. If not, they go usually in third line or fourth line. It's a
so
problem.
So you agree with the ESMO guideline that we should really use in third and subsequent line, which is on
actually
the
I don't
ESMO
agree.
Guideline.
I don't agree. I've been trying to do a window of opportunity trial in frontline for a long time, because I think that this could be for patients with low burden and not a good PS for comorbidity, an alternative to chemotherapy, a little bit like in breast cancer for HER2 low burden patient. But I was unable to interest the pharma to do the trial. So,
And what would be your thoughts? We see a lot of patients, despite their RAS, RAF wild type, but if they're HER2 positive, that might actually constitute a resistance mechanism to EGFR antibodies. So do you think these patients with HER2 positive colorectal cancer should be treated by cetuximab or panitumumab in frontline?
That's a good point. No, they shouldn't, because, and we try to treat them with BEVA. With bevacizumab. We have tons of generated data in PDX, in patient-derived tumor models, preclinical, that show without question that HER2 and the amplification of HER2 and mutation of HER2 are heralding resistance to anti-EGFR. And there are some clinical data also suggesting the same, confirming this, on top of our own. So I think that this is a very good point. Patients that are HER2 positive should not be treated with anti-EGFR.
So now, Antonia, I know your specialty in pathology, but really looking at this clinical trial data, as I mentioned, actually, all of these data are really single-arm trials. They're not randomized control trials. Obviously, there's a very small proportion of patients with HER2 positive. Am I correct to say it's probably only about 45% of colorectal cancer patients are in fact HER2 positive, before any EGFR antibodies? So in your view, do you think, you know, these studies should really now influence our guideline?
Yes, actually, it's interesting to note that if you look just at the population of RAS, BRAF wild type, then the proportion of colorectal cancer that is HER2 amplified or HER2 positive is higher. So it could be in the neighborhood of 10% or even higher, depending on the studies and populations. So it's not a trivial proportion of patients. And certainly, I think currently, for patients who were wild type, RAS wild type, and started already established therapies, if they're found to also carry HER2, and when they progress on other therapies, then having the test done for HER2 amplification is a quite useful tool to have in the treatment option armamentarium for these patients in light of the results of the clinical trials. So at progression and, you know, having all these markers studied and reported in pathology reports, I think is the standard of practice currently. And as we will continue to add more and more markers, I'm certain. But HER2, I think, is here to stay.
Good. Maybe Silvia, do you mind if I just maybe move on a bit? Because I think it's important to for the audience about your thoughts, Silvia, on, you know, the relative efficacy. So, you know, you obviously, as you said, you've been heavily involved in trontuzumab lapatinib developments, more recently the antibody trontuzumab deruxtecan. And, you know, the Mountaineer studies, trontuzumab tucatinib, was reporting a median survival of over 2 years. I mean, when you look at this data, I mean, what do you think? Do you think one should use one set of agents over the others? Or do you think they're probably about the same?
You know, $1 million question or $10 million question. these are all phase twos. Well, the Mountaineer, the next Mountaineer, it's an historical comparison between phase two is really very, very dangerous. What I think it's important to underline here is this, we're talking about a 30% response rate, 30 to 40% response rate, around 6 months PFS and long survival and disease control around 70% in third and fourth line. Let me tell you what standard of treatment is doing that. Certainly not regorafenib, certainly not TAS. I mean, we're talking for these two drugs of response rate below 5% and 2.5 months of PFS median. Yeah. So the problem here is, you know, this is a small population, and therefore it's very difficult to do large-scale clinical trial in such a small population. And the drugs that originally originated the entire story are drugs that are not anymore commercially, fancy, because they are not, you know, they've gone off of
patents. Yeah.
Yeah, off patent. So I think, you know, at the time when we published the paper, they were the first papers on the immune on pembrolizumab, and the response rate of pembrolizumab alone is 30%, which is exactly the same as the anti-HER2. But pembrolizumab got a lot of interesting follow-up, whereas much less HER2. I rest my case on this.
Yeah,
I think.
So I think really, again, to summarize this session, I think currently, as both you said, the efficacy of these HER2-targeted agents in this specifically molecular selected subgroup of patients do seem to be quite promising and impressive, and does seem to be, at least in the cross-trial comparison, better than the so-called gold standard treatment like regorafenib or trifenib tipiracil. So I think these agents are certainly very interesting. And I think if we have access to it, or patients have access to it, we should certainly strongly consider this as treatment options for our patients. In our final session, we'd like to discuss the safety profile of HER2-targeted therapies in colorectal cancer and how it can inform our clinical practice. So again, looking at all the guideline-recommended HER2-targeted therapies, trontuzumab plus pertuzumab, trontuzumab plus lapatinib, or trontuzumab deruxtecan, these are the most commonly seen side effects with these agents. They're probably mainly highlighted by GI toxicities, which are the most common side effects. But they're mainly grade 1 to 2. There may be some grade 3 toxicities, but most of them are low-grade toxicities. But of course, when we think about HER2-targeted therapies, there are some specific side effects that we are interested in. The cardiotoxicity, left ventricular ejection fraction drop, which is commonly looked at with trontuzumab, is again reported in these studies. But thankfully, so far, again, you can see from these data that they are relatively uncommon. But with the antibody drug conjugate trontuzumab deruxtecan, there's a very specific side effect that has been highlighted to both investigators as well as clinicians that use this particular antibody drug conjugate, which is interstitial lung disease. They are seen, you can see there, in 9.3% of the patients in the DESTINY-CRC01 studies. But they also had grade 5, i.e. treatment-related deaths with this particular toxicity. So it is constantly highlighted to clinicians which use this, this particular agent. Now, for the other future guideline recommended therapies, trontuzumab, tucatinib, and these other agents, you can see they are mainly, again, GI toxicities of low grade. Cardiotoxicity is once again very uncommonly reported. So this appears to be well managed. So, Sylvia Antonia, looking at this adverse event and safety profile, what would be your thoughts? Antonia, as a pathologist, what would be your perspective on the safety profile of these agents?
So, trastuzumab has been in clinical practice for many years. It's actually one of the first targetable drugs that we've had in the market. And the benefits to the population, therefore, have been immense. In other cancers, from breast to other GI, gastroesophageal cancer, for example. And so there's a lot of experience managing these patients. And patients, I believe, should be reassured that in the right context, as they can benefit from the treatment, this is something, an option that they should consider very seriously. And I would not think that the small proportion of side effects that generally tend to be mild, as you mentioned, should deter patients from accepting to go into these therapies.
So Sylvia, what would be your thoughts? I mean, do you think any of these agents or any particular combination of agents that you'd be more concerned in terms of safety compared to the others?
I kind of agree with Antonia on the fact that both trastuzumab and pertuzumab and trastuzumab and lapatinib are being used in breast cancer and, for time immemorial now, 30 years almost. So I'm not concerned about that. The toxicity is really, really very mild. Substituting lapatinib with tucatinib, which is an irreversible inhibitor of the tyrosine kinase receptor, might add some toxicity to the GI tract. Our earlier data, also toxicology data in animals, showed that when you shut down the HER and HER2, HER1 pathway, you increase the toxicity. I mean, the same thing happened if you put together trastuzumab and cetuximab, for instance. But however, these are manageable. I think that the real problem here is it's for the trastuzumab, for the immunoconjugate with the deruxtecan, because and it's really a pity. And it's hampering the development in colon cancer. It does not do that in breast cancer, because contrary to the colon, in breast cancer you have activity also in the histochemistry.
The HER2 low one.
1+ and 2+, yeah. Whereas in colon, no. So there is not the advantage of using a toxic cargo to the HER2 receptor. And therefore, the toxicity, it's really worrisome, because the pneumonitis, there are no marker that will allow you to foresee who's going to get the pneumonitis. And, there have been deaths. So as with every toxic drug. I remember, I'm old enough to remember platinum. It was almost thrown out because of toxicity, one of the most useful drugs in our armamentario. So toxic drugs that are very active, we can deal around. But in this case, as I said, there must be, it might be a problem because of the lack of activity on this, on the 1+, 2+ HER2 of colon, which is specific of colon.
So, as you said, trastuzumab, lapatinib, pertuzumab has been used for a long time. But what do you think about, you know, patient receiving these agents for a prolonged period of time? It's obviously, side effects means different things if you only have it for 2 months versus if you have it for a year.
Well, I can tell you the story about one of my first patients in the ERA class trial. She was the second one. She's now in her 8th year of treatment. We suspect, and you know, she's cured. I mean, she was almost at the end of her life, and certainly at her treatment, she had 5 prior treatments. She complains about gallbladder problems because she cannot eat French fries. And so that tells me that she's okay. We suspended treatment 2 years ago. But then there was a suspicion of a reprisal of the disease and we started again. So she's 8 year in continuous treatment with trastuzumab and lapatinib. No problem whatsoever besides her gallbladder problems.
So maybe at this point, I'll just again summarize the safety data from all these HER2 targeted agents appear to be mild and manageable. Although some of these newer drugs like trastuzumab deruxtecan with the pneumonitis, one will really need to pay very special attention to ensure that the efficacy that we're going to see from future trials really outweigh the risk from this. So if there are no further thoughts on the safety, I think we'll move on to our conclusion. So Sylvia and Antonio, it's been a great discussion today. I think with the new guideline from both ASMO and NCCN, we would now be testing our patients with metastatic colorectal cancer, RAS/RAF wild type for HER2 upfront in the initial treatment pathway for the metastatic colorectal cancer. And the guidelines now clearly state what we would define as HER2-positive colorectal cancer. And I think you highlighted that we really should be treating highly amplified HER2-positive colorectal cancer. The current agents that are recommended in the guidelines all have a very promising efficacy results, although they are all being tested in single-arm studies. But compared to our current standard of regorafenib and trifenib and uracil in third and subsequent line colorectal cancer treatment, these agents in this particular molecular selected subgroup do seem to have better efficacy. And we've also seen the safety so far from these agents are well managed, mostly low-grade GI toxicities. But we do need to watch about the cardiac side effects. And also with the antibody drug conjugate trastuzumab deruxtecan, that specific side effect pneumonitis. But I think we can be very enthusiastic about these agents and what they can provide as extra treatment options for our patients with HER2-positive colorectal cancer. And on this, I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on this session.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this and related topics on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com.